It happened. They're out. Thursday at Starbucks, I saw my first sign for pumpkin spice lattes. And pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers are already stacked on store shelves. So what are other ways you can celebrate the fall since it's apparently here? We'll have the answer from Wisconsin Trails editor Chelsea Lewis later in today's show. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks for listening to Behind the Headlines from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. In our first segment, we're going to reach back a bit into our business section. Retail is an unforgiving business to be in these days, but you don't have to look far from Milwaukee to find a company that's winning accolades for its style and winning customers at pretty good clips, too. The company? Duluth Trading, based outside Madison in the town of Belleville. Its secret? A defined niche and a marketing approach that doesn't take itself too seriously. The company's sales have nearly doubled in 2 years, and Journal Sentinel reporter Rick Rimmel recently delved into their growth and their quirky marketing approach. Journal Sentinel business writer Tom Content sat down with Rick to talk about Duluth.
All right. Hi, I'm Tom Content from the Journal Sentinel business desk, and I'm here with business reporter Rick Rimmel. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Tom.
So, Rick, you cover retail, you cover marketing. Now you've got a great read that combines both of those beats of yours.
Wow. Well, Duluth Trading Company is a really interesting little firm. Well, they're not little. They're $300 million in sales, although in the retail world, that's not gigantic.
But who is Duluth Trading?
Duluth Trading Company is a designer and seller of rugged workwear, you know, tough jeans and carpenter pants and shirts that you can wear outside on the job. And their clothing, mostly their clothing company, their clothing is designed for people in the building trades, but about 90% of their customers are not working in the building trades. They're folks who want a rugged pair of jeans or shirt or whatever, or they just maybe because they're working around the house, or they might just like the way it looks.
So there's a bigger appeal beyond what you would think of as just the folks out on the work site.
I don't think there's any way they could sell $300 million worth to carpenters and masons.
Right. And I know we'll get to – so they're known for their cheekiness in a way.
Very cheeky, yes. Good pun, too, because one of their they have a very distinctive marketing style. It sort of pokes fun at itself, uses mild body humor, and has really helped them stand out from the crowd in their slice of the retail world.
So I know this is a family podcast, but how extreme does it get?
Well, their sort of signature entry into this world was their long tail T-shirt, which they came out with, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, which is extra long so that it covers up a plumber's butt.
Aha, the dreaded cheeks. Okay.
There's your cheekiness, Tom.
There I go again.
Now they also have a pair of jeans that have some extra room in the crotch, and they call those ballroom jeans. And they have some what are supposed to be super comfortable underwear that they've dubbed buck naked underwear. I guess that's because of how it's supposed to make you feel.
Well, there you go. And the marketing folks, the marketing experts say this is working for them, huh?
They love it. They think it's to a person who I interviewed, they think these guys know exactly the right thing to do with their brand, and they're doing a great job of it.
Right. And I know they have stores in Metro Milwaukee. I know in Port Washington and elsewhere, and they're based in
a little village called Belleville, which is about 20 miles south of Madison.
And the Duluth name comes?
They actually started in Duluth, and they started as an outfit that made tool organizers, a tough canvas tool bag that you could fit over a 5-gallon paint bucket and that took off with contractors, and that's what the company sold for a while, and then they started wandering into apparel.
Probably couldn't get $300 million just on that either.
I don't think so.
Right. Well, thanks, Rick, for coming in and talking about it.
Tom, it's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Rick's story on Duluth Trading already ran in print. If you're curious about reading it, check it out at jsonline.com. Ready or not, here comes fall. And with that comes fall festivals celebrating all things autumn. Wisconsin Trails reporter Chelsea Lewis talks with Emily Risto about some of the state's best offerings.
So we have some festivals in this state as we celebrate, you know, pumpkins, apples, cranberries, whatever else. What are some of your favorites?
Yeah, it's fall festival season. Yeah, I feel like we roll right from summer festival season into fall. It's like the calendar turns to September and we have permission to, you know, bring out the pumpkins and apples and stuff. I really love this one wacky kind of fall festival called Beef-a-Rama. It's a festival up in Minocqua. And Minocqua is near and dear to my heart. My folks have a cabin up there, so I've been going up there for forever. But this festival is kind of crazy. They actually, like, parade these beef roasts down the main drag in Minocqua, and then everyone eats beef sandwiches. And then you have the typical festival stuff, like music and arts and crafts and that kind of stuff.
Awesome. So is that your favorite of the offerings? Or?
It's my favorite, like, wacky one. And because, you know, it kind of has I have a personal tie to it. Mm-hmm. I also really like Cedarburg's Wine and Harvest Festival.
Yeah, a little closer to home here in Milwaukee.
Exactly. Yeah, that's an easy little day trip. And Cedarburg is such a quaint little town. You know, they have the historic downtown there, so it's great to visit any time of year. But they really pull out all the stops for the fall festival they put on. You've got, like, a grape stomping contest that they do over at Cedar Creek Winery. I think they do some, like, horse-drawn wagon rides and then, you know, all the rest of the fall fair.
Excellent. So my favorite fall festival is the Fall Fest in Sister Bay. Have you been to that one?
Or? I have not been to that one, but Door County is just gorgeous mm-hmm. in the fall. The leaves change a little bit later because it's a peninsula, the water kind of moderates the temperature there. So I think that one's in October. So that's kind of right around when the colors should be peaking, which is awesome. And then Door County is just such a great place to visit with shops and restaurants and kind of that quaint, feels like very New England-y. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a good one.
And what would you recommend for, like, families with young kids? I'm guessing maybe Oktoberfest isn't number one on their list.
Yeah, La Crosse throws a huge Oktoberfest festival every year at the end of September. They've gone so far as to trademark it, Oktoberfest USA, so they're, like, all gung-ho about that. I mean, you could take your kids there, but, yeah, there's going to be drinking. It's Oktoberfest, of course. But there are a lot of great kid-friendly festivals. One fun one is the Nakusa Giant Pumpkin Fest. They do big pumpkin weigh-in there every year. Last year, they set a new state record for the biggest pumpkin grown in Wisconsin. It was, like, over 2,000 pounds. I'm sure kids would get a kick out of that. And then they actually, like, drop pumpkins from a crane. So
they just splatter everywhere.
Yeah, kids love that. The Wisconsin Dells has a really great fall festival weekend. They have a couple things for adults. There's, like, a beer festival and a craft beer walk. But then on Saturday, there's all kinds of stuff for kids, from arts and crafts to a petting zoo, pony rides, scarecrow stuffing. And then, you know, the Dells is just a great family-friendly destination as it is.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to talk real quick about this 10-foot apple pie. What is that all about?
Yeah, so Galesville is where it's at. They throw a festival called the Apple Affair. It's October 1st this year. They have a special oven that they bake a 10-foot apple pie. So it's like a 10-foot diameter apple pie in.
Wow.
They've been doing this forever, like decades. And it's a cute little town. I think it's kind of out in Driftless country. And then mm-hmm. they also do a bike tour with it. They do a big breakfast where they, like, make this huge omelet for everyone to eat. They're really big on the big foods
yes.
there. So it's like my jam.
Spectacle. Yeah.
I'm going to have to get out there this year.
All right. Great. Well, it sounds like there are a lot of good options for people to check out.
Absolutely. Enjoy fall.
You can find Chelsea's story on fall festivals in Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's also available at wisconsintrails.com. A new Marquette Law School poll came out last week. Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert joined our JS on Politics show to discuss the results of the poll. Here's what he said.
We're joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington Bureau Chief, to take a look at the presidential race and how it's shaping up here in Wisconsin. And we have new poll numbers out from the Marquette Law School poll. So let's start with those numbers, Craig, and then I'll get your take on them. So when you look at the registered voters in the presidential race, Hillary Clinton is leading Donald Trump 42% to 37%. That's a narrowing from the last poll. When you look at the likely voters, it's an even closer race there. Hillary Clinton 45% to Donald Trump 42%. So, Craig, take us behind the numbers a little bit. What's changed in order to drive that change? Are there certain groups that have, you know, moved or what?
Well, What's going on? Some things have changed and some things haven't. Likely voters are going to bounce around a lot because it not only depends upon shifts in public opinion, it depends on who is saying they're going to vote. So sometimes just changes in intensity and interest can drive those likely voters around. They bounce around a lot. Registered voters actually gives us a better idea long-term of public opinion. And what we're seeing is the race is essentially back to where it was before the conventions. I mean, low to mid-40s for Clinton, mid-30s to high-30s for Trump. That's where it was in June. That's where it was in July. The only real anomaly was Clinton's bump after the Democratic and Republican convention. So there is some stability in this race. And right now, the main reason that Hillary Clinton is leading is that she's getting more loyalty from Democratic voters than Trump is getting from Republican voters. So Trump's big challenge at the moment is improving his numbers with voters in his own party. He's kind of flatlined there, and he's not quite where Clinton is, and that's a big deal.
All right, let's look briefly at where these other voters are going, because tellingly, neither one of them is above 50% in the polls. When you look at the other two candidates out there, the main ones, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, it lines up 41 to 38, Hillary and then Trump, and then Gary Johnson, 10%, Jill Stein, 4%. Are those numbers from Johnson and Stein significant, Craig, in terms of how they may shape the race?
They could be if it's close enough. I mean, right now they're not changing the outcome, but if it's close enough, it could really matter. And you're right to note that there's a lot of weakness we've seen throughout this summer in the polling in Wisconsin for both candidates. One sign is their high negatives, and they're both high. But the other sign is the fact that neither one of them is really coming close to 50%. If you look at registered voters, Trump has never been above 37% in the Marquette polling this year, and Clinton has only been above 43% once, and that was in her post-convention bump. So both of them are just struggling to get anywhere near 50% with these voters, and that's why you're seeing voters, a lot of voters say either neither candidate or going in some cases to the third-party candidates.
All right, let's look at a couple issues, one on each side where it kind of gets to where the candidates have been moving around and maybe gets to some of these issues. So Donald Trump in the last week or so has had, you know, his position on immigration, which was a very strongly worded, very direct position on a wall and keeping folks out and deporting them, and he's maneuvered and moved around a little bit on that. Is that potentially hurt him, Craig, with his most loyal supporters to be seemingly going a little bit softer on that issue?
You know, it could hurt him in a more indirect way, which is just reinforcing questions among voters about what he really stands for. If you're a conservative voter, is he a consistent conservative? If you're just a middle-of-the-road voter, you know, concerns about the volatility and all the pivoting. I talked to a lot of voters in Wisconsin last week. This is a big frontline concern of theirs, even among Republican voters. So I think there's the concern. You know, it's kind of interesting. It sort of reminds you a little bit of Scott Walker's struggles on immigration when he ran for president late last year. He was all over the map on immigration, partly because it was an issue that he didn't have a whole history on as governor. But it tells you that it's a hard issue for a lot of candidates, a lot of politicians, including Republicans, because it's possible to kind of sort of go too far right, and it's also possible within the Republican Party to be seen as too soft. It's a very delicate line.
All right, and on the other side, with Hillary Clinton, she's spent the last week or so dealing with questions about the Clinton Foundation, access to her at the State Department, more email questions. Does this drive at the kind of the trust issue that folks have with Hillary Clinton?
It does, and one thing we saw in Clinton's case in the Marquette polling is that after that post-convention bounce, her favorability numbers or ratings were dropped right back down again where they've been all year. So maybe the last poll was an anomaly. She's struggling. She's struggling on trust. There was a focus group that I attended in Brookfield last week with voters, a dozen voters in the Milwaukee area that had voted at least once for either party in the last four presidential elections. And it was not a pretty picture for either candidate, but the numbers, the perceptions, the comments, the rhetoric, the language that these voters used about Hillary Clinton and trust and credibility was pretty harsh and pretty intractable.
All right, and finally, let's touch on a story that's coming up, really, this the start of a series across the USA Today network looking at key counties in the presidential race. You've helped crunch a lot of numbers for that, and we're leading off with a look at Waukesha County, which our folks here are familiar with. But tell those who are watching why Waukesha County is so interesting in the context of this presidential race.
So Waukesha County is kind of a microcosm of that base Republican vote. It's a it's a pretty unusual county in some ways. People turn out like crazy. It's very Republican. But it has a lot of things in common with other high turnout Republican counties around the country. These are counties where a Republican candidate like Donald Trump needs a big turnout. He needs a one-sided vote. Right now, he's struggling to get that. He's struggling with Republican voters. He's only getting like 80% in Wisconsin with Republicans when Hillary Clinton's getting 90% with Democrats. And when you talk to Republican voters in Waukesha, which is the most important Republican county in Wisconsin, there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of frustration over their choices. A lot of people haven't been sold on Trump yet. He needs to maximize his vote in places like Waukesha County to close the gap with Hillary Clinton.
All right, so that series starts next week across the network and including on jsonline.com. So thanks for joining us, Craig. We'll have more next week at this time.
Okay, until next time.
Of course, you can find more of our political coverage at jsonline.com, including the full replay of our JS on Politics show. That show is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And on that note, I'll wrap up today's show. Thanks so much for listening. Again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Have a happy Labor Day weekend and join me next week as I take you behind the scenes at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.